Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Natto. Saturdays at the Spa is brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Good morning and welcome to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you, the penultimate Saturdays at the Spa. You always have to use that word if you can. So two left today and closing weekend next week, and I'm excited to, we've got three good guests on today. Jack Knowlton's going to join me in a second, of course, managing partner with Saratoga Stable, and Tis the Law is ready to roll for the Kentucky Derby next week. Just weird saying that, but worked this morning, so we're going to talk to Jack in a second here about that. Then another Jack's going to join me live on the set at around 10:20, 10:25, Jack Sisterson. Three horses today in the four-go. Trains Vexatious, of course, who upset Midnight Bijou in the personal ensign earlier in the meet, and she's locked and loaded. I believe she's going to run next weekend at Churchill Downs on their undercard, Derby undercard. So Jack Sisterson will join me shortly as well. And then yesterday, a taped piece with Craig Milkowski. And if you're not familiar with Craig, he's the chief speed figure analyst maker for Timeform US. And it was a pretty fascinating segment for me especially, and I hope you enjoy it as well, because I think Timeform US is starting to get some traction, and serious handicappers are really taking note of their pace figures and pace projectors and things like that. So Craig was, we did a Zoom video yesterday and got about 20 minutes with him kind of talking about what they do, the figures they make, how to use them in your handicapping. So I thought it was a pretty exciting segment, and hopefully you can garner another tool maybe in your handicapping bag. But my first guest, we have him back. He was so excited to be here. He was here at 9 a.m. this morning. But Jack Knowlton, thanks so much for taking the time, Jack. On what was a busy morning, you were here a lot earlier than 9 a.m., right?
Yeah, I got a text from Robin Smullen at 4:53 that the work was on. We originally thought that the rain was probably going to force us to move it, but we got lucky. And, you know, when things are going well, they just continue to go well. And in this case, this is the day we wanted to work, the kind of track we want to work on, and it all came together.
I guess that's an easy question for me to ask, because here's the work here, if you can see it. Very early, as Jack alluded to, and they did beat the weather. So what did you see, Jack? I know I read your quote to Dave Grenning. You seem to be pretty pleased. And how was you and Barkley?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole team was very pleased. You know, we went in 58-4, galloped out and went 11 and change. Just kind of a typical work for him. I mean, and you know, you're seeing what I saw. You couldn't see anything.
Yeah, couldn't see much.
I mean, I heard right after the work what the results were, and then you know, talked to Heather when she came off, and she was just real pleased. And that's what he does. I mean, he goes out there, and as she says, he does his job. And
effortless too.
Very easy for her.
This is Robin's niece, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. She'll be going down to Churchill with him on a plane, and she'll be on him every morning down at Churchill. This is the last work, so this is you know, an important work.
I have to believe you hinted at it. I have to believe both you, the team, obviously, and Barkley were very happy to be able to beat the rain this morning.
No question about it, because you know, when Robin and Barkley and I were talking yesterday, it was just an awful lot of uncertainty.
Right.
You know, the what ifs. I mean, we didn't want to, you know, work him on a sealed track, and we were afraid that, you know, with rain coming, that Glenn Kozak, you know, we'd have to have a track sealed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, how much rain are we going to get, and what shape's track going to be on tomorrow morning? Kind of our backup thought was that, you know, maybe by the break, 8:30, 8:45 tomorrow morning, it would be harrowed and be good enough to work. And then, you know, if everything really fell apart and we still didn't have a track that Barkley was comfortable with, we could have put it on Monday, but we really didn't want to do that.
Right.
That's getting
right.
too close, really.
And you mentioned it, and it's just it's an easy question to ask. You got your wish this morning, and really, you know, knock on wood, nothing's really gone wrong since the year started. You had a plan, even with the craziness of no Derby in May. When I had you on here before the Travers, you said, you know, you mapped out the schedule, and really you've checked off every box, and there hasn't been a straw gone wrong.
I mean, the only little bump in the road we had is he threw a shoe at Palm Meadows, and you know, got a sore, little bit of a sore foot, and you know, it was just a few days. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than that, again, knock on wood, yeah, it's been tremendous.
Jack, this was obviously the last major piece of work. What is the plan for him, the horse, from here?
He'll fly down to Louisville on Monday.
Okay.
Heather will fly with him, and Manny and I are going to be flying down with some other jockeys and a couple other people early on Monday, because Manny has and all the
sure.
jockeys have to be there by 11 o'clock.
And Jack mentioned to me off the air, he says all the jockeys are three,
yeah,
right?
It's Javier and Johnny V and Manny, that's it.
Yeah, and if you're not in the loop or you missed it, Churchill Downs initially, of course, with the COVID-19 and the world we're living in now, Churchill Downs initially said all jockeys need to be here 2 weeks out. And that was like a whoa. And as Jack joked to me up there, we knew Manny was going, that's for sure, but we weren't sure who else is going. Now, about a week, 10 days ago, I think Churchill kind of relented a little bit. Jockeys all need to be there by the 31st, which is Monday, so that gives them a little more time, because Churchill opens Tuesday, so they can ride the car there, but Manny, Jack, Javier, and John Velasquez, that's it. So
that's all, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and it's kind of, again, Manny's, of course he's going to go. He's on an even money favorite to the Kentucky Derby. But the question is, you know, if you're on a 30-1 shot in the Kentucky Derby and you don't have a lot of business in the stakes, it kind of put these guys in a little bit of a precarious position.
Yeah, it really did. I mean,
all for safety, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, there were a lot of riders and agents that, you know, looked at, you know, Tiz and how he performed in the Travers and saying, you know, wow, I mean, do I want to give up really good business at Saratoga? Because there's still a lot of good business
there is
at
a
Saratoga.
Lot, yeah, the Woodward,
Grade 1 races,
yes.
And, you know, the Hopeful and some races like that. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, you didn't have, you know, a lot of folks right. wanting to get down there, you know, take care of business in New York. And obviously the Ortizes, they want to win the riding title.
Yeah,
so
well,
that's
a
big
good
deal
point,
for them.
Too. Yeah, that's a good point, too. You mentioned the Travers. Let's bring it up now. You gave me about 35 minutes that morning, which was, you know, was great. And we walked through all the races, and now we've got one more to look at. And Jack, as impressive as Tiz the Law was leading up to this race, this was, even you who've obviously been with this horse since day one, even you on the pulse that you have with him, this was unbelievable. It really was.
It was, you know, kind of, you know, it's hard to criticize a horse that had won.
He's three wide on the outside here, by the way.
That had won two Grade 1 races pretty easily and, you know, ran triple-digit buyers a couple of times. To say, well, you know, he hasn't had his breakout race. You know, he hasn't done anything to, you know, really separate himself from a handful of other three-year-olds, and but he didn't need to, and I think that was, you know, my comeback to anybody who, you know, said something like that. I mean, he's winning his races by, you know, 3.5, 4.5 lengths. Man, he's saving him. I mean, why beat him up? And I think we're going to see at the end of this, you know, a very intelligent rider doing the right thing for the horse.
And a very smart rider that listened to the instructions of his trainer, maybe, not to get too excited at the end of said race.
That's right, absolutely. But, you know, you always have to be wary when Bob Baffert sends
sure.
a horse in. I mean, we know what he's done here and what Arrogate did. And, you know,
what was the feeling right
point,
there?
I mean, this race is over.
Yeah, what was the feeling
I mean,
there when Manny gave the look and
yeah.
Scrubbing hard on Uncle Chuck, and Manny just looks under his arm.
Right. You know, I mean, here's Manny just, you know, urging him on a bit. He gives him one little tap. I mean, and race over. And it's been that way. Look, say, well, am I going to hit him? No. He looks around. There's nobody coming.
No,
there's nobody there.
He's geared down.
And look at him. I mean, the last 16.
He's in a canter.
Yeah. So the fourth fastest Travers ever, I believe. You know, wrapped up at the 16th pole. I mean, I don't think he would have beaten Airgate's record if he'd have run out. But still, that's pretty impressive. There's been a lot of Travers, and to win the race like that, wrapped up like that, in a time like that, I think says he's a pretty good horse.
And, you know, Anthony and I on the handicapping report, we said it, horses don't win the Travers like that. You're not supposed to do that. I don't care who's in there. You're not supposed to do that.
Well, I mean, the 109 buyer figure, you know, does for the moment separate them from, you know, the rest of the three-year-old group. I think Thousand Words had 104.
Yeah.
You know, there are a handful that have, you know, broken triple digits. But, you know, the mile and a quarter, none of the other horses that are going to run in the Derby have proven that they can
and
get it.
And you know you can get it,
and, you know, and maybe, you know, there's some horses, Honor AP being one. Maybe the mile and a quarter is going to step them up. But we know what we've got going to mile and a quarter. He's had two really great works coming out of that race. So, you know, the other questions people have, well, he's had a lot of time between his races, and can he handle it? Well, you look at these two works, I think the answer is pretty
still
obvious.
Thriving. You mentioned Honor AP. You mentioned Thousand Words. You know these horses. You know, do you sit down, do you look at this race and say, oh, I'm not worried, but I respect this horse. Who are the names? You mentioned a couple of them.
I mean, Art Collector is, you know, certainly one that has had success. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Thousand Words, I think everybody, you know, left him for dead when
they
he
did.
Really tailed off. But, you know, the race he ran in California, beating Honor AP, and ran 104 buyer.
Yep.
I mean, you gotta give him some respect, certainly. So I think, you know, those are the ones that I think, you know, probably are going to be the second, third, fourth favorite, maybe. You know, I think, you know, unfortunately, Caraco, you know, got injured yesterday.
Yeah.
Can't go. I mean, I don't think he was a threat to beat us off the Travers, but he ran a big race.
He did. Lightly raced horse, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he would have been one that I would have used, you know, in my exotics.
Yeah, he would have been a nice price,
I thought he was credible.
Yeah. You've been down this road before with Funny Side, of course, in 2003, a different road in May. Is there any difference in the excitement? Is it you think back to those days with the team that you brought then and to compare to now? Is it the same? Is it different? Is it as good as it was?
Well, it's hugely different.
Okay.
I mean, you know, back in Funny Side, he didn't have a lot of respect.
You're not taking a bus out to Churchill Downs?
Oh, we'll have a bus. Yes, that is in the car.
Maybe, all right.
Maybe two, depending upon if I can get enough seats.
Okay.
But, you know, Funny Side came in under the radar. He's 12-1.
Yeah.
He was a New York bred, a gelding. I mean, all of that. So he wasn't one that was supposed to win. I mean, it's a little daunting now. I read Mike Battaglia's, said yesterday, you know, well, he's going to be even money, maybe 6-5 if he draws a bad post. I mean, so it's totally different. There's only one person, Lou Chitterton, that was on a ride with Funny Side with me. And unfortunately, Lou's not going to be able to make the race. So I've got, you know, a much bigger group of people. None of them have been through this.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of excitement. But, you know, you just look at the environment, you know, with COVID-19. And with the unrest in Louisville, a lot of people. I mean, I haven't had any of our folks I've got that would like to go, 29 out of the 35.
You say 35? Okay,
yeah.
I thought that was the number.
And
okay.
There are, you know, some folks that have, you know, health issues and so on. But, you know, there's a bit of trepidation. I know Barkley's concerned that, you know, for the safety of the horse.
Sure. It's a scary time. There's no doubt about that. You said right now 29. It could all 35 go. That anybody that is involved with a Derby horse could go.
Well,
is that?
I don't have enough seats. I'm still working on
it.
I mean, you know, Churchill's been very good, but it's you know, there's a lot of demand and there's very little, you know, seating that they're going to allow. And it's, you know, it's very tightly controlled.
Sure, sure. And rightfully so, in this this day and age, a week out now, and like you said, you wanted to work today, and you got it in, so all everything, knock on wood's behind you now.
It is, now it's just getting him down there safe and sound, and then Heather will just gallop him, you know.
Yeah, what is the plan, Derby week at your, obviously not going to work, but he's going to get over the track.
He'll be over the track, yep, and you know, again, some people say, well, you know, the only time he lost was at Churchill, but we've talked about it. Yeah. Draw line through the race. Looks like the weather, long range forecast, is going to be nice. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we'll get a good day.
Was there ever any, had you guys thought about maybe the final work over the track, or was that never really in play?
No. Barkley historically likes to stay at home mm-hmm. as long as he can. I mean, you know, when we took Funnyside down there, he arrived on Wednesday.
Okay.
And everybody said, you know, back in those days, well, you have to have had a race or at least a work over Churchill if you're going to have a chance to win the Kentucky Derby. Well, Barkley proved that wrong.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, and that, again, that was 2003, so that was still kind of a thing, and, you know, the three preps and all that, and a lot of that has gone by the wayside, I think, in recent years.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Barkley's thought back then was, you know, I don't want the horse to figure out he doesn't like the track.
Right.
You know, don't work in there. So, you know, he's always trying to think one or two steps ahead, which I love.
And Barkley, you know, I feel like for a Kentucky, a gentleman that's already won the Kentucky Derby, I feel like he's finally maybe getting his just due as a tremendous horseman. We talked about it. You know, he doesn't train for Coolmore. He doesn't train for Seth Klarman. He doesn't train for Mike Pegram. But he's a tremendous horseman. I know you can speak to this as a guy that's been with him for 20 years.
Yeah, now. And there's no question about that. You know, he's one of only four contemporary trainers that has won all three legs of the Triple Crown. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Zito, it's Baffert, and it's Wayne Lucas. I mean, that's pretty heady company that you're in. Yeah. I mean, even somebody who's done as well and won as many races as Todd Pletcher, Todd still hasn't won the Preakness.
Right.
So I'm hoping that, as you say, that Barkley is being recognized now and that people are going to say, you know, he really does belong in the Hall of Fame. And I'm hopeful that, you know, that can happen.
Yeah, he's just, and I think we're really seeing it this year with all the audibles that have needed to be called or the stopping and starting. And, you know, you don't know if there's a Kentucky Derby in May. And Barkley, the horse especially, you know, credit to the horse, but credit to Barkley hasn't missed a step.
No question. I mean, I think, you know, if we're able to continue on through the next two races, I think it'll be maybe one of the, if not the greatest training feat that has ever occurred.
It's a really valid point. Before I let you go, obviously the Preakness, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but is the Breeders' Cup Classic in play?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I mean, as long as, you know, he stays healthy and sound and, you know, runs, you know, the way we hope he's going to run these next two races, that's definitely what people want to see. And it's, again, it's a little daunting when you, you know, look at some of the, you know, polls that have got him at the top or right near the top in the Classic already. So, you know, he's getting a lot of respect out there.
Well, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm pretty sure you wouldn't trade places with anybody either right now.
You're absolutely right. We're thrilled to be along for the ride. You know, the pressure is on Barkley. The pressure's on Manny. All of our partners, we get to enjoy, you know, the great horse that we've got, and hope we can keep the ride going.
Well, Jack, thanks so much for the time you've given us this summer. It's been great to have you on here, and we've, you know, picked apart every race and taken the time this morning on a busy morning. So thank you. Best of luck going forward and down the line, too.
Appreciate it. Jack, it's always great to be with you guys.
Jack, thanks so much. Jack Knowlton, managing partner of Saratoga Stable. Tis the Law this summer, front and center here at Saratoga, and we've been blessed to see him do his thing in the Travers and then next Saturday in the Kentucky Derby. So a big special thanks to Jack. He's been great this summer, taking a lot of time out of what's a pretty busy schedule for sure. So one down. When we come back, we'll have another Jack. Jack Sisterson's going to join us. Three horses in the Grade 1 forego a little later, and trainer of Vexatious as well, who has really thrown her hat into the ring this year for the Distaff Breeders' Cup. So stay tuned. When we come back, Jack Sisterson.
No track, no problem. There's no better place to follow the Saratoga race meet than Capital OTB and OTB TV. With our live TV shows from the Saratoga backstretch and our live remotes, all the information you need is right here. Each and every day of the Saratoga meet, we talk with all the top trainers, jockeys, handicappers, and racing personalities. So stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV this racing season and win more.
is the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Birdstone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you for Go Saturday, Sword Dancer Saturday as well. And, you know, I can't, we just had Jack Knowlton on, managing partner of Saratoga Stable. And Jack's just been phenomenal between, you know, when I was still in Fort Lauderdale and he's doing the things with Seth at Pinnell's, letting him join the watch party at Pinnell's with the partners as Tis the Law took the Belmont. And you know, he gave me about 40 minutes. We literally played every race of Tis the Law's career. And Jack sat here and we kind of picked them apart and dissected them. And that was the morning of the Travers. And here Tis the Law gets his final work this morning to ready himself for the Kentucky Derby. And as you heard Jack say at 4:53, Robin Smullen, Barkley's assistant, texted him, said, "The work is on. We're working. The race is on." So he was here early. They beat the rain. And it was great to have him one last time before, as he said, he's heading down to Kentucky with the jockeys on Monday as they ready Tis the Law for the Kentucky Derby. The final work is out of the way. Everything, the heavy lifting is done. So best of luck to them. And I'm happy to be joined by another guy that sets up shop in Kentucky. Jack Sisterson joins me. Saturdays at the Spa. Jack, great to have you here. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. And I might be a hard act to follow after Jack, but you know, we'll be rooting for him next Saturday.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I'll ask you. You've seen these horses. You've probably seen Art Collector pretty up close. What do you think of these three-year-olds this year as the Derby beckons next Saturday?
You know, it's going to be interesting to see because, you know, usually it's the first Saturday in May and it's, yeah, you know, first Saturday in September now. So you're going to have a lot mature horse, probably horses that wouldn't have made it in May that have made it in September. So it's, from a fan standpoint, I'm sure a lot of people will be looking forward to it from that aspect.
Well, let me, before we get into your individual horses, just as a trainer, as a horseman in general, I've asked a lot of the trainers I've had on the set here this year, do you think it'd be easier or harder to win a Derby in September? You mentioned the maturity of added horses. What is your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, personally, you know, you might have a whole sort of peak in June, May, but then you might have a late developer too. So as an individual, you got to listen to the horse and see, you know, when they're maturing. And you could have a horse that wants to, you know, peak in May, and you could get lucky in September. So I suppose different cases, yeah, in every scenario there.
You know, for degenerates like myself that know the racing form, Jack Sisterson's been a name we've seen for about 3 years now. Just talk a little bit about your background, though, for maybe the people that aren't as familiar with you and how you got to this point in time and you're coming up and tutelage and things like that.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I wouldn't be here without the support of many, many people behind, yeah, me. And I got a lot of people to thank. I could go on for hours and thank everyone. Went to University of Louisville. You know, fortunate, started hot walking for Todd, and that was my first introduction to the American side of racing. Mm-hmm. I walked into Todd's barn and
Todd Pletcher,
yeah, and he had two in the Oaks that day. It was Rags to Riches and, okay, Octave. And me being new to the sport, new, yeah, to American racing, I didn't know who Rags to Riches was,
okay,
Octave. And then you go down the shed row and there's, you know, five in the Kentucky Derby the following day.
Yeah.
Just have one alarm would just be a dream come true.
Right. And,
you know, you sit here now and I train for Calumet, who English Channel stands there.
Yeah.
I train a lot of English Channels myself. Mm-hmm. English Channel was in Todd's shed at the time I walked to it. So it's pretty cool, you know, looking back there. And,
circuitous route almost.
But again, I can't be here without the support that people give me, the opportunity to learn. And, you know, I've fortunately got a great staff, and I'm only as good as the people behind me at the moment.
Came up with Doug O'Neill, right, as your first kind of real assistant trainer. Yeah. You were with I'll Have Another, correct?
Spent, you know, wherever he was, I was. And, you know, the unfortunate night was came around. So we, Doug and I, were able to spend some great experience, excitement together. And thanks to Doug that I wouldn't be sitting here.
What did you take away, maybe the biggest thing you took away from your time with Doug? Two Kentucky Derby winners, you mentioned, a Preakness in there as well, almost a... Unfortunately, didn't get the chance to go for the Triple Crown. But as you look back on your time with Doug, how long were you there for?
I started with Doug. It was actually probably 6 months before I'll Have Another debut. He won first time at Hollywood Park, which would have been 2011.
Yep. Did you come here with him? He was in the hopeful, I believe, right?
No, actually. Okay. I had a little on the beach there. We'd used to play beach volleyball and strained my back.
Okay.
And that, so I couldn't travel. I was supposed to go. So I'd watched it at Del Mar. And, but just the experiences, Doug allowed me to travel with all top horses like that, and you know, you get to learn from each horse is different, and you sort of learn their traits and what they like to do and not to do and things like that, and then you sort of try and move them forward, take a little bit of each bit of what I learned from Doug and implemented in our training museum at the minute.
You mentioned that you weren't really familiar with Rags to Riches. Were you familiar, as now you're, you know, the private trainer for Calumet Farm, as steeped as any farm, as any owners in this sport? I mean, what is it like to train for a group like that and the history they have and now to be a part of it?
It's very humbling, you know, when I was offered, you know, the few horses to start off with, you know, I had to Google it, the history of Calumet, and it was, growing up in England, I was still are a big soccer fan.
Okay.
You know, you got your Manchester Uniteds, you know, at the top of the Premier League, and when I heard the name Calumet, you know, I Googled it, and it was humbling for me, for them to even think of me in a small way, and very grateful, and, you know, thankful for the opportunity they give me, and, you know, fingers crossed, you know, we can keep this relationship going for a long time.
Well, I would think we're going to bring up first footage of Vexatious running against Monomoy Girl in the Ruffian, and big effort that day. And you said keep the relationship going. Here she is, third. She's a three horse with, the Calumet Silks there. You've had her for about a year now. When you got her from Neil Drysdale, what were your initial thoughts with her, as far as what maybe she could develop into or what you were getting at the time? Another great horseman from Southern California.
She came to me in fantastic shape from Neil, and, you know, her recent form was all along on the grass.
Yeah.
So initially I went, you know, you look at the condition box and you look, where's the next mile, a quarter mile, a half turf race for her? She was ready to run, I think she ran on soft ground at Belmont, and we were there, and she said, you know, bring her home. So I started looking at condition box for... like I said, the distance type of turf races, but she was training extremely well on the dirt.
Right.
I looked at her previous dirt form, and, you know, she ran in the Oaks, and what sort of led me towards trying her again on the dirt was she ran in a one other than at Santa Anita against the boys in Battle of Midway on the race, who obviously won the Breeders' Cup Mile, so she had some tough competition there, and, you know, she told us she wanted to have another chance to run on the dirt, and I know initially I think the first race I ran her in was the New York at Belmont, and she finished fourth that day. Then we ran her in the Modesty at Arlington, and then we came here to run her in the Summer Colony last year, and that's when we thought, wow, the way she trained and the way she ran, just been beat by Blue Prize, she could have, you know, hopefully another year of a dirt career.
Right. We'll bring up footage of the personal ensign, and this was a big mountain to climb. morning at Saratoga. We're going to show the whole race. Clearly, she's turned a corner in her last couple starts. Is that safe to say?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what you're getting into here. And here she is. She's the four horse here. Midnight Bijou comes in off that. You probably saw it front and center in Kentucky, that monster win on the Stephen Foster card in the Fleur-de-Lis. She's every bit of 1-5 in here. What were your thoughts going in, taking on, a horse that was easily, at least at the time, the divisional leader?
You're going into it, Vexation's got an extremely good pedigree. We wanted to get some grade one placing into her. So, with Point of Honor, resume, if we can hit the board, it'd be great. She ran a great second in the Ruffian, came back in 2 weeks and breezed a really easy half a mile. And said, we've got a chance to possibly hit the board in the personal instant. I've got to give a huge amount of credit to the staff in the barn for getting her ready for this race, and Jose Lescano. I thought he'd give her a fantastic ride. And on paper, a lot of people do not think that Vexatious has that much tactical speed and can be forwardly placed. We thought she could be in that position, and Jose said exactly the same thing the morning of the race. Said, I'm going to bounce out, and if no one goes to the front, I think I can make the lead. If the two inside horses want to go, I'll be sitting, in a perfect spot, second or third. And it was a pitch perfect ride, and it worked out well for us.
This, as we see her turn for home, you've got a horse that's, legitimately 1-5. She's maybe a champion. You would not let her by. And I think I read Jose's quote. They could have run around 3 or 4 times. She wasn't getting by. This is a tremendous effort here.
And I think being by Giants Causeway and how tough and gritty Giants Causeway himself was, the two Giants Causeway came out in it, during that stretch duel. And she really seems to have, like you said, changed the corner on us. She's 6 years old, and it might sound crazy, but she's acting like she's only getting better.
Right,
and
she's pretty lightly raced, all things considered, right?
Exactly, and, she puts her heart in the line every race, as you can see there, and she trains hard, and I jumped to the gun a bit when she won the personal instance, and we'll give her 2 months in between the next start.
Right.
But she's trained extremely well out the race. She's had 3 easy half-mile breezes here at Saratoga, which she loves, and she'll be put on a flight tomorrow back home to Keeneland, and you'll see her run next week at Churchill.
So this is a case of... that's a La Troyenne, correct?
Yes.
Okay. The case of where she's bringing you, you're not bringing her.
Absolutely. Mean, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't run her when she wants to. And, each horse I train differently, and you want to read the body language of each of them, and she's really telling she wants to run back.
And you mentioned, each horse you train differently. We'll switch over to the 4-go. We've got 3 in today, and like Vexatious, these 3 horses... Lexingtonian, top of the list, Everfast, of course, and True Timber, they all came from other trainers. As a trainer yourself, is there an adjustment period getting a horse that maybe you weren't with from the ground floor?
I think naturally, because you're getting a horse, it's the first time you're around, so you have to learn, that horse individually. And it's a trial and error period, and it takes a bit of time to get to know each one of them. So we backed off them, and we don't train hard. You see, we don't win first time out.
Right.
We don't win off a layoff. I usually train. I let the horses put their feet where they want to put them, and they'll tell us when they want to move forward. And that's the way we got to learn each of the 3 that are running this afternoon.
We've got, Lexingtonian is certainly the best of the 3. Not that Everfast and True Timber don't have their merits either, but we have a couple races of Lexingtonian. It will show... first, we'll show the Churchill race 2 back when he was won an optional claimer. He's kind of a horse that gets no respect. Here he is, a 7-horse, 3 wide. I'm looking at his page here, Jack, and 11-1 and 18-1 and 17-1. He's kind of the forgotten horse, but boy, he kind of brings it every time.
He does. I'm hoping for a big price this afternoon. That's when he runs his good races. When we brought him back off the layout at Oakland, that was because of the pandemic. That was the only spot we could bring him back in. It was an extremely tough spot for him. as I said, we don't win off the layoff, so we expected a huge move forward second time out. I think this was a way tougher field than expected at Churchill.
Right.
But I prefer to run in a tough race to get a gauge on where we're at.
Where you're at, yeah.
And, you know, he showed us that he's still got run left in him, and, you know, we expect a big performance from him this afternoon.
Now, you brought him out to the Bing Crosby, which was not the original plan. So before we get into that, talk a little bit about, because he was entered obviously, in the Vanderbilt, and didn't work out.
It didn't work out, and it was a two-month period when he won at Churchill to the Vanderbilt. The reason being, I'd look at the raggers and cheat numbers, and he ran a career low number. And it was an extremely fast number. My concern was running him back quick with a potential bounce. So I said, let's give him, you know, the 7 or 8 weeks, and the Vanderbilt came up.
Yeah.
So when you look forward, you know, you schedule the works, and you try to get them to peak on that, was it August? I forget the actual date. So, you know, we always give them their final piece of work 2 weeks out.
Right.
Expected to run in the Vanderbilt, we get him up into the starting gate, and you know what? It's in his hands now. Yeah. You've done all the hard work of preparing him. And things are going to happen, you know, and it was unfortunate that he's never had any gate issues in the past. And, you know, touch wood, every horse in the race was sound and nothing drastic happened. But I was sitting at home watching in the barn at Keenan, and my first thought was, this horse needs to, I can't sit on this horse any longer because he needs to run. So I called the stewards right away because I wasn't sure what list I was put on. Was it a starter list, a vet list? You know, I need to play by the New York rules, and I didn't want to do anything I wasn't supposed to. So my initial thought was, I need to breeze this horse.
Right.
He can't do nothing the following day.
Yeah.
So I called the stewards, we weren't on any list. I breezed him the following day. This is after I had our vet here, Dr. Hunt, went over him after the race.
Yep.
The Sunday morning, we'd always put the horse's best interest first, and he came out, you know, for the unfortunate gate situation in great shape. The steward said I was fine to breeze. I called the racing office at Saratoga saying, is there any race next week from here? Because I would have left him here.
Yeah.
There wasn't a race, so called Tech Sutton and begged them, do you have a spot on the flight to California? And thanks to Tech Sutton, we were able to put him on the flight, and Del Mar welcomed us in the Bing Crosby.
Let's bring it up. We showed the Churchill race where you were right on a pretty hot pace. At Del Mar, you were not on a hot pace. You're barely in the screen right now. You can see the fog. Thoughts of at this point? I mean, they were flying early, but did you want to be back here?
Or? No.
Okay.
I'll tell you the truth. No. And I could lie to you and say that wasn't the plan. And it's... How do I say? If the plan was to be having forwardy plays, but they went so quick.
Sure,
he may not have ran that good a race because he may not have finished up. I do believe that he's a horse that wants to be forwardy placed, and he responds to pressure. And the more fight you put him in, the more he responds.
Yep.
So this was I wasn't able to make the trip, so it's 9:30 at night back home and at Keeneland, and I thought, you know, maybe the 2 week of traveling have taken its toll, and that's why he's so far back. And at the 3/8 pole, I thought, well, he's picking up a little momentum, and surely they can't keep going that quick. And
right.
He started to pick it up pretty good, and, you know, unfortunately he couldn't get the win, but we were very proud of that performance there, and considering what I asked him to do during this short period of time.
And the one thing that Jack didn't mention is that was the same day as the personal ensign. So at about, you know, at about 5:20 in the afternoon, you had never won a grade one race, 3 years out on your own, right? And then Vexatious upsets Midnight Bijou, which, you know, was great to begin with, and then out on the West Coast, you almost doubled up. I mean, that had to be young career. You know, you haven't been out on your own that long, but that had to be a heck of a day for you.
It was, but it's unfortunate. It says my name in the program. I can't do it with the people behind me. I'm only as good as my staff. I've got extremely good staff, the support of great owners, and I think first and foremost, you have to have the horse, and I'm provided some decent horses, and I've got great staff, and I'd like it to read you know, team
sure.
Bond, not my name
right.
in the program, because there's so many people that put so much hard work and effort into it, and it's my face when
yeah.
it wins. So I don't want to take any credit for that, because those guys back at the barn put so much hard work and effort into getting each and every horse ready to run in the afternoons. But speaking on behalf of the barn, they were extremely happy with
yeah, I'm sure.
with that day. And you know, winning your first Grade One, and then you've got another one that you think surely this can't happen.
Yeah.
When we broke, and I thought, oh, well, it wasn't meant to be. And for a second, well, we might be able to do it again. But, you know, we would have been, you know, extremely happy to hit the board in either one. And
yeah.
like this afternoon, if we can hit the board, then we'll be happy.
I don't want to discredit Everfast or True Timber, because they have some races in here that fit with this group, too. Just, we don't have any footage of those, but just talk a little bit about each of them and what they're bringing today.
They do, and I think both on their best day, they deserve... They've trained and they've ran some races that they deserve an opportunity at the Fogo this afternoon.
Yeah.
With Everfast, he's ran and he's shown, you know, in the Preakness and in some other races that he's well capable of, you know, performing against some top horses. We've cut him back in distance, and he was showing us in the mornings that, you know, that 7/8 to a mile distance will be his type.
Mm-hmm.
And that one turn mile at Churchill, I thought it was a little tougher race than a listed race.
Right.
When Owendale beat us that day. And, I made a mistake of running him on the grass at Keenan. I had to give it a shot. It was a Grade One in your own back garden.
Sure.
So
walk out of the barn.
Now I know never to try the grass again. He came back. I looked at the condition book and thought, well, there's a one other than 7/8 of a mile. If he was to win that and win it well,
mm-hmm.
we'll run him back in the Fogo. So... You see him.
It's happened.
Ricardo Santana breezed him last Saturday, and he couldn't have looked any better. We expect a big performance from him this afternoon.
True Timber, you mentioned you're not a guy that wins first out. You're not a guy that wins off the layoff. I look at True Timber, got the race out of the way last time off a February break, first time in your barn. So, I mean, just from a handicapping perspective, looking at him on paper, I would think he's going to move forward today.
He will move forward a lot this afternoon. And... going over the race from a handicapping standpoint, it doesn't look like there's too much speed.
That was my question to you, yeah.
He will be, thanks to Kendrick, he's won on the horse. We've briefly chatted, and I never tell jockey, I'm not a jockey, so why, I can't tell a jockey what to do.
Right.
I'm not a jockey myself, I'm just going to mess things up. But Kendrick's...
very aggressive.
Very aggressive, and I think you'll expect True Timber on the lead this afternoon.
Yeah.
I assume Chad's going to send Complexity,
right.
and there might be a few others, but I think True Timber's ran some good races, been closer on the lead, so that's the tactics there this afternoon.
And I mentioned we do a handicapper show before this show at 10 o'clock, and my partner and I mentioned, you know, I said for a 7-furlong Grade 1 race at Saratoga, you look at it on paper, there is no speed. True,
no,
confirmed speed.
Yeah, exactly, and that's one that, you know, True Timber's good races have been forwardly placed, and I don't want to take that away from
yep.
him. You sort of get fortunate enough that you enter and you think, wow, we could get lucky and get the lead there. And, you know, I don't mind telling people that True Timber, that's our goal, is we're going to send with
yeah.
Kendrick on and try and get the lead.
Right.
If someone wants to go with them, that, you know, good,
yeah.
it'll be a competitive race. It may set up for... a closer here and there, but True Timber will be sent out of there running.
Jack, before I let you go, we always think two-year-olds up here at Saratoga. Any horses maybe you're excited to run, or not necessarily here, but in general that are getting close?
We've got a nice group of two-year-olds, more back-end types,
okay.
you know, bred to go further. And
sure.
like I said, I don't win first time out, so I didn't want to, especially during the pandemic, rush them to be running 5/8,
yeah.
3/4 and things like that. So it's hard to pinpoint, because fortunately we do have a good group of them that you'll see sort of start to debut, you know, here at Churchill,
yeah.
Keene, and moving forward, you know, winter time.
Where will you be in the winter?
We'll go to Florida this year.
You will? Okay.
We will, yeah. You know, the past 2 years, thanks to Fairgrounds, that they've accommodated us, but we've got grass horses.
Mm-hmm.
The weather, it seemed to rain quite a bit down there in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Didn't really fit our training program to where, you know, I'd back off them on rainy days. So
right.
we'll give Florida a shot if Florida allows us
yeah.
in there. So.
Yeah, that's the world we're living in. Yeah.
But, you know, again, just fortunate to be in this position. And
sure.
And thanks for having me today.
Well, Jack, it's a real pleasure. I really appreciate you stopping by. Vexatious going forward, and of course, three today in the four go as well. So best of luck today, best of luck forward, and thanks so much.
Thank you very much indeed.
I appreciate it. Jack Sisterson, like I said, he's going to saddle three today. He's going to be busy today in the grade one four go. Lexingtonian at the top of the list, but certainly Everfast and True Timber. And then we saw it up here earlier in August, Vexatious upsetting Midnight Bijou. You'll see her next weekend at Churchill Downs, and hopefully, you know, major player in the Breeders' Cup right in Jack's backyard at Keeneland. So many thanks to him, Jack Knowlton as well. So one more break here on Saturdays at the Spa. When we come back, I got Craig Milkowski of Timeform US, taped him yesterday, and pretty fascinating piece with the speed figures and the pace projector. We talked about the four go. So when we come back, Craig Milkowski, Timeform US. Stay tuned.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Thank you. I think what you guys are doing is awesome. You're doing a great job. Keep that game rolling.
Seth, you do a great job too. So thank you, and I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate watching your show every day.
In a recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Saturdays at the Spa. Brian Natto with you, and I'm going to bring in my next guest. Happy to be joined by Craig Milkowski, Timeform US, and a day and age where, you know, just looking at the daily racing form has really kind of evolved. And I know, Craig, I'll bring him in now, working with Timeform US and the speed figures and things like that. Craig, thanks for taking the time on a busy Friday morning. Happy to have you here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. It's been a while. I've been on Capital OTB a few times, but it's definitely been a few years. And you picked a good day, because next week would probably be much more busy with the Derby coming up. This week's not too bad, so I'm happy to be on.
Yeah, Kentucky Derby on Labor Day weekend, and the 2020, the world we're living in, especially. I had David Aragon on last week, who I know you work pretty closely with, and we talked a lot about the morning line, but I wanted to get you on. You're the chief speed figure analyst for Timeform US and with the daily racing form. Craig, before we kind of get into exactly just, you know, different figures and things like that, just give the folks an idea what you're doing with Timeform US. And I know you know, it's kind of an advanced form of handicapping, a lot of info, a lot of data out there. Talk a little bit about an overview of exactly what you guys are doing.
Timeform's definitely different than your traditional PPs. I'll be the first to admit, when we first started, I used to do this for myself at pacefigures.com before I was hired by Timeform US, and we were eventually acquired by Daily Racing Form. So we're kind of on the same team. Well, we are on the same team with DRF, just an alternate approach. But I had trouble at first because they're not traditional PPs. You look at one horse at a time. You can't see multiple horses on the page. But we offer a lot of things, and it didn't take me very long to get used to it. I can tell you that if you give it a couple of days, it clicks right in. And now I have a hard time looking at older PPs, you know, more in the DRF style that you get in Formulator with the Classic. I can do it, of course, because I did it for, you know, 30 some years. But I do prefer the Timeform version. We use a lot of colors now. That was something I started with Pace Figures, which has evolved and made its way in the Formulator, where turf figures are green, dirt figures are in brown, and things like that. And you know, we provide more than just the final time figure, which is he with Beyer, and I'm not going to knock Beyer figures at all. He's basically the guy who I read all his books, learned everything I could, and just think he's a real pioneer in the game. But I've taken it a step further by adding pace figures to the running line. So it gives you more a picture of how a speed figure was earned. We give you some things to tell you if it was we had trouble making the speed figure that day. And when I say we have a team of two people at Timeform US, me and another guy in California who likes to remain anonymous, so I keep it that way. But he helps me out, does about 30 to 40% of the tracks on any given day, and I do the rest. But we just kind of give a different look. And the other thing we do, we are affiliated with Timeform from overseas in the UK, and we use the same scale that they do. Now, our figures aren't made the same way, not even close. But we do put them on the same scale. So when we get shippers over here, like you have on Saturday in the Sword Dancer, you do have a pretty good comparison of how the horses fit in.
Craig, you mentioned that back in the day, I always, you know, when you, the general rough rule of thumb with the buyers was about 12 to 14 point difference. A little bit about that, and talk a little bit about that in general, but you said, you know, your figure is all-encompassing, whereas the buyer's speed figure is simply how fast the horse ran, period. Your figure does take into account a lot of different things, correct?
Yeah, it does. First, I'll touch on the Timeform thing. I think that number's changed over the years.
Okay.
It definitely used to be in the 12 to 14 point range. I used that myself. I can remember a long time ago hitting a horse named By the Sport who won a stakes race in New York, had a really nice Timeform figure, and I used that adjustment. But it's definitely changed for whatever reason. I think it's more 20 points this year. If you bet all the shippers that come over and compare them to buyers and only deduct 12, you're going to bet all the shippers and you're probably going to lose most of the time. So I would say 20 is definitely a better number these days. As far as the figures being all encompassing, we do look at pace. We look at things like weight. We leave that as an option for the user with weight. It's not a huge adjustment. We do a point is a pound is equal to a half a point. So if a horse picks up 6 pounds and you choose to use that weight adjustment, the figure is going to be lowered by 3 points. If they're dropping 6 pounds, it might raise 3 points. It's not that cut and dry, but that's a pretty good rule of thumb. We also do still provide the final time figure. There are some people, more traditional handicappers, that want to decide what the pace does to the figure itself more than us doing it for them. So the final time figure is there right under the finish position. If you want to ignore the other one, you can do that. Where we're really unique, I think, is when it comes to turf. We definitely make bigger adjustments for horses that finish fast, particularly when the pace is slow. I know that the buyer guys have more trouble, and it doesn't mean it's on for us because it's not by any means. Sometimes the pace is so slow, no adjustments on turf are going to account for it. But we do have a little bit of advantage in our figures at that second dimension of pace, and I can look and see that maybe this turf race or even occasionally on dirt was really affected by the pace, and our adjustments take care of that. We can use the same variant for a lot of races where other speed figures kind of have to fit the race into a puzzle, you know, and break it out and do something different.
I know before we get into the actual forego, and you sent me the pace projector, and we'll get to that as well. Just in general, Craig, talk a little bit about your pace figures, because I know, and I said this to David last week when we had him on, David Aragona. I think in the last 5-10 years or so, I think pace in race flow and pace figures have really come to the fore of handicapping, and it's serious players are looking a lot more internally within the races and who's going to get to the front and how the pace is going to shape up, whereas maybe before they just looked at the overall buyer or the race in general. As a handicapper, talk a little bit about the tool that you can provide them with pace figures and how it can really elevate a handicapper's game.
Yeah, it definitely what you say is true. That's kind of how I got my start. I never intended to do this for a living, but I was a big pace guy myself. And when I I still do post on a Pace Advantage message board, and that's how I got my start. I started posting pace figures for all the big races, and people were really interested in that. If I was just another guy providing final time figures, I doubt anybody was going to be interested, because in the end, most of the time, probably 95% of the time, all the speed figure makers are going to be really close on final time. But when it comes to pace, not so much. There are a few things to point out. There's some misconceptions about our pace figures. For one, the pace figures are meant to be compared to that final time figure, not so much to races at different distances and on different surfaces. And people tend to be confused by that. What we're trying to do at Timeform US is look at more of a race flow. When you see our figures, we're telling you this race was faster than the final time early. It probably favored closers, or vice versa. And we do that with color coding in extreme situations. We use blue for slow pace, red for hot pace. So definitely it's more of a race flow. If you're one of those guys who wants to look and see who's really the faster horse, we offer some other tools, things called adjusted fractions. We use the pace projector, as you say, and that's going a few steps beyond. I mean, I could spend hours talking about that, but I don't want to do that and take up all your time. But we do have tools, and when we use the pace projector, which you mentioned, that's where we're looking at raw speed and just how fast these horses have run in the past. But you're not necessarily going to see it just looking at the pace figures we provide. For example, a horse who shows a 140 pace figure in 6 furlongs on the dirt is going to be much faster raw speed wise than one with the very same speed figure going a mile on the turf.
And it is important, I think, especially to, you know, when you look at a field of, you know, you just take a quick look and you see, well, there's 5 horses that want to be in front. They all have ones by their name. But to be able to take that a step further and to decipher, and, you know, with a strong figure in a projector, you don't necessarily look at them as all horses that have ones, because, you know, X horse is faster than the other. And I would think that's where the real advantage comes in that the casual maybe handicapper will look at that and just see four horses are going to battle on the lead against each other and they're going to tire each other out. Not necessarily the case when you can bring to the table a very honest figure that tells you who is in fact faster.
Yeah, I think what you're kind of getting at is the speed of the speed type situations, and we definitely use that. Our pace projector uses both. We also give a running style for every horse, and what we're looking at is how the horse likes to run. Are they horses that like to have a lot of those ones? But also how fast they are, because as we've all seen, you can have a horse with a lot of those ones. If they get thrown in a tough spot over their head, they just can't keep up and they're not really a factor. A good example, and of course I'm going to pick one that turned out well, but don't get me wrong, it's a tough game and it doesn't always happen, but Serengeti Empress, and I think it was the Ballerina a couple weeks ago, was a horse who was entered in a race where we showed a lot of speed in the race, a lot of horses with ones, but she just looked like the speed of the speed. She was able to establish that lead. We had her on front in the pace projector, and she was able to win. So it definitely takes the running style of the horse, but also how fast they've been running into account.
Well, that's a good segue to the forego, because we've got 11 of them in grade one going 7 furlongs, and we'll bring up the pace projector that you guys have come up with for this race. And I see, you know, favors horses on near the early lead. And oddly enough, Craig, I would think you would agree, 11 horses going 7 in a grade one at Saratoga. You mentioned the Ballerina last week. I think of the King's Bishop. I think of the tests where we're apt to see these kind of hellacious early paces. The forego, it doesn't really look like that at all. So I would think, you know, this is a prime example of where something like your pace projector, and as we see, you know, you've got Lexingtonian and Complexity and True Timber up there in front. A tool like this could be very beneficial because, again, on paper, simply looking at the PPs, you don't see a horse that's truly a confirmed dead send kind of front runner.
Yeah, I felt Lexingtonian was a great example.
Yeah.
Just looking at that horse alone being up front on the pace projector tells you there's just not a lot of speed. Now, he's been a versatile horse in his career, but the very last time out in the Bing Crosby, I mean, he came from the clouds from behind a fast pace. So he's not a horse who I really would you know, want to bet that's going to be on the lead. But one thing to keep on with this pace projector is we're basically telling you how fast the horses have run and what they like to do. It's a great starting point. We don't get them all right, of course, but it just gets you thinking about the race in terms of the pace and how it's going to develop. I just finished recording our Timeform US forecast, and this was one of the races we covered. And for example, just because of that pace projector, David Aragona, I don't think it was his top pick, but he really does like complexity in here because he thinks he's a horse who can take advantage of that lack of speed and go to the front. He's done it in his career. He didn't do it last time. He showed some versatility, able to raid off the pace. But it just shows this race is kind of ripe. If you get an aggressive ride, it's ripe for the picking. You get an aggressive ride in here, somebody could get an early lead if they really want it.
Yeah, and I think conversely, too, even though, you know, like you said, it doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily going to play out this way. But I think if nothing else, what this pace projector shows is that you might want to think twice a little bit when you look to a horse like Ferenz Fire, or these horses that don't have win would be a great example. You know, horses that are going to take some money, but really kind of look up against it in terms of how the pace might play out.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'll do. A horse I tried to make a case for when I was handicapping this race was Majestic Dunhill. I think he's got some sneaky hidden form. I don't really think he's a turf horse as good on turf as he is on dirt. But as you say, when I look at that pace projector, he's just going to be up against it because he doesn't have a lot of speed. There doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of pace. One thing I should mention personally, I don't always use the pace projector as like a primary factor in my handicapping. It's something I do to maybe separate contenders. But there are cases where it overrides. If you're going to get a big price on a horse you think can make the lead on dirt, I think you're silly not to bet them. Sometimes I think we go out of our way to go against long shots. It's just human nature to look for the logical thing to bet. But I definitely use it to separate contenders and in these extreme cases to weed out horses who, even though I might like them under normal circumstances, I'm just not going to play them if I don't think they're going to get a good setup.
Well, let me ask you then, Craig, before we let you go, as far as what do you feel is the most potent tool that for a newcomer, at least, that's getting involved in Timeform US? And I know there's some great videos out there on the website. The tutorials are really good because, you know, I've dabbled in it and I'm starting to get involved in it a little bit. And it can be a little cumbersome. And you guys obviously offer a lot of information. Maybe as a newcomer or a beginner who pops on the website and says maybe they want to get involved with this, what would you suggest to them as a nice kind of dip your toe into the pool as far as what to start with and maybe what you feel is your biggest asset that you can offer?
Well, you mentioned the website. I can't take any credit for those videos, but they're very well done. They're at timeformusblog.com, and there's tons of them out there, lots of articles that tell you everything in our PPs and how it works. So I would say anybody who's new to the past performances, spend a few hours there and watch those videos. Even now, the main thing I use, I think the biggest benefit is just looking at those pace figures and how the race flowed and who it favored and who it hindered. I kind of look at them as one race track biases, if you will. For example, you can look at Everfast in the Forego. It was a race last time out, in the Forego today. But last time out, he won an allowance race at 7 furlongs. And the first thing that jumps out at you is that the pace figure is 140 early. It's coated in red. It tells you the pace was really hot. So it just tells me right away he's a horse who got a really good setup. So that 114 Timeform US speed figure he ran that day is probably what I would expect from him at the same distance with a similar setup. If we don't get pace, which we're probably not going to, I wouldn't expect much from him.
Right, right.
And that's the main tool I use is those pace figures and just how the race flows.
So obviously you can kind of tell who's been flattered, who was hindered by the pace. Before I let you go, it's August 28th, so we have to talk about the Kentucky Derby, obviously, in this weird year we're living in. Any overriding thoughts on the Derby, Craig, as you know, you've made these figures? Tis the law country up here with the New York bred and Saratoga connections and a lot of local connections. Is it as cut and dry as tis the law's even money? Do you have any thoughts about the Derby that maybe are outside the box and maybe somebody that might be live that you're
maybe looking to blow up the board, not necessarily a win candidate, but who could spice up some exotics?
Yeah, you know, I think this is actually a really good crop, and that's despite we've seen some defections early on. We saw Charlatan and Nadal, two horses who were very highly regarded, one split divisions of the Arkansas Derby, go by the wayside for various reasons. But personally, I'm not handing the race to Tisdall all. I think there's some other really good horses out there. I think Art Collector could give him a run for his money. Thousand Words even seems to have rebounded to his good two-year-old form. So, you know, I'm not going to hand the race to him. I'm not sure. It's hard to say at this time who you'd bet. We just don't know how heavily Tisdall all is going to be played. Maybe Art Collector will wind up be second choice. And I'm not even writing off Honor AP. I think he had some excuses last time. I'm not sure he was fully cranked for that. So for me, the winner is going to come from those four. I don't think there's any crazy prices in there. And, you know, it's I'm just not going to hand it to Tisdall all at likely 7-5. I think it's a really strong group. And I would even say the same for the Oaks and the three-year-old fillies. They're running actually on my speed figures as fast as the colts are. Horses like Amin and Speech and even Swiss Skydiver. Four Graces did it in one of those about 7.5 furlong races at Keeneland. So I'm not sure if he's ready for routes, but both of them are really strong props. And this is a year when the Breeders' Cup comes around. If they keep it up, I'd be looking to lean towards some of the younger horses instead of some of the more established older horses in both the filly and mare division. But let's get through next weekend first and see how they deliver.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a different time of year, but I think we're seeing what happens when three-year-olds mature a little bit towards the end of the year. Craig, I want to thank you so much for taking the time on a busy day out there for you. Craig Milkowski, Timeform US. Thanks so much for taking the time. Best of luck this weekend going forward, and I'm sure we'll catch you down the line.
All right, sounds good, Brian. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Craig, thank you so much. Craig Milkowski with Timeform US. And like I said, it's a website and a product that you do definitely have to get on there and kind of fool around with and find your way. But there is a lot of information out there that you're not going to see just by picking up your daily racing form. And in a day and age where, you know, literally everybody knows everything about this game and what happened and what didn't happen, it's one of the few tools where I think you can get an edge. Race replays, obviously, are still on that short list. And the list keeps getting shorter and shorter. Like I mentioned, you know, everybody knows everything nowadays with Twitter and websites where you can watch replays and things like that. But Timeform US with the pace projector, the pace figures, I think gives players still an added advantage that might not be obtained just simply by looking at your daily racing form. So thanks so much to Craig for taking the time to kind of navigate us through that. Gave a good look at the four go too. And I agree totally. We had Jack Sisterson on as well. And, you know, I agree with Craig totally in that it's a race where there is not a lot of pace. So horses that are wanting to come from behind a little bit are going to be up against it. So keep that in mind as they run that later on in the day. So special thanks to Craig. And I guess that'll wrap it up here on Saturdays at the Spa. Eight down, one to go, I believe. Kentucky Derby weekend is upon us next week. So that'll do it today. And I will see you Thursday on the Handicappers Report. Best of luck for Go and Sword Dancer Day here at Saratoga.
You've been watching Saturdays at the Spa with Brian Nadeau. Saturdays at the Spa has been brought to you by CapitalOTBBet.com, New York's premier wagering site. CapitalOTBBet.com. Sign up today. The new Capital Mobile app. Wager anywhere, anytime. Download it free from the iTunes Store or Google Play.